Repeating for the tape here, title is Decisions Great and Small.
Okay.
And it'll be from a discourse from Brother Lawrence Kirkham of the North Seattle Bible Students.
Well, thank you for a very thorough introduction. Now, if I can click on the right thing. Oh, wonderful. Before we begin our discourse, I want to thank the local ecclesia for the selection of the panel, which was an encouragement for myself and the other participants to study the subject. And we were greatly benefited before we ever came to this convention. So we're thankful for that. In 1960s, my work took me to this area. And one evening, couple nights ago, I was thinking about all the brethren I knew when I was down here at that time. Sister Jean helped and some others. Homer and Grace Hamlin. He was the manager of public works for San Leandro. He designed the San Leandro Marina himself and saved all the architectural fees. And I think he may have even done the general contractor work on it. Homer was a very capable man. And Grace, a lovely sister. They had two daughters. Sister Lamoureux, which some may remember, but not too many. Elderly sister in the truth, very sound, and just delighted to hear the old truth message. And she was an encouragement to me. Brother Ken and Sister Mary Nail, Brother Ed and Lillian Fay. When I was a teenager, I came to Los Angeles and I only had so many shirts. And I asked the host, where could I find a Chinese laundry to do my shirts, because I always had the Chinese laundry do my shirts. They did a good job. Lillian said, I know a Chinese laundry. So Lillian Faye washed and ironed my shirts. Paul and Beth Davis. Some that you may remember came into the truth because Paul taught Sunday school in a nominal church for years. He was asked to lead an adult Sunday school. I believe Ken and Mary Nail came in that way, and also Brother Homer and Sister Grace Hamlin, and there were others that came in out of that adult Sunday school class he taught. Robert and Ruth Seclemian. She was a sea captain's daughter, born and raised in an old sailing ship. Woodrow and Wilson Lynn, they came into the truth because Clifford Miles witnessed to them. Clifford was baptized the same year as my grandmother, way back in, about 1914 or 18 in that period. Catherine Domingo, this is what started all this off. I picked up her third volume back here, and I opened it up, and I looked at the underlining in the foreword and in the last chapter on Thy God Reigneth. And I remember fellowshipping with her and talking about that dear brother who used to give the wonderful talks on Thy God Reigneth. Levi. By the way, Levi's mother was a cook at the dawn in Brother Russell's day, and he counted his consecration from his birth. Well, I'll better run through this. Clarence and Dorothy Weber, John and Rachel Hasty, Fred Williams, Sr., Jr., Betty Bradbury, later O'Toole, the Knockerts, Garrisons, Arnold Staub, Bill and Carolyn Blom. Carolyn was from the Northwest, and Bill was from San Francisco. There were quite a few classes in this area in that time in the 60s. And now we have shrunk up a bit. Our subject reminds us of that wonderful character, Joshua, and his inspiring words. If it seem evil unto you to serve the Lord, choose you this day whom ye will serve, whether the gods which your fathers served were on the other side of the flood, or the gods of the Amorites in whose land ye dwell. But as for me and my house, we will serve the Lord. Joshua 24:15. Now, how is that for making a decision? Because of his decisiveness, perhaps it was an influence on Caleb. And out of those millions that came from Egypt, only he and Caleb. Two out of millions entered the land. Very special people, ancient worthy, soon to rule on earth as it is done in heaven. Recently, in sorting through Edward and Doris Lorenz's library, I came across a copy of Pastor Russell's sermons printed in 1917, a year after his death. The original owner was very likely Edward's father or mother. On the flyleaf of this book are written these words: "Indecision is one of the greatest foes to character building." That's found on page 755, paragraph 1, in a sermon titled "Decision and Character Building," well worth the reading and studying. We remember Brother Lorenz's decisiveness in matters great and small, perhaps a trait inherited and surely one practiced as he endeavored in his focused life. So from out of the recent past, he speaks to us as Joshua from the ancient past. The example of a Christian life well lived lives on after death draws down the last curtain, and our change completes our task here on earth. I enjoy history. I enjoy reading about the marvelous life of Pastor Russell. That's one of the most inspirational lives ever lived on the face of this earth. And there are others that I drew inspiration from in the past, and still do, even if some were not as loyal as they could have or should have been. Being at one time much afflicted with indecision, these words apply particularly to me, as well as others with similar weaknesses. What should I do? How should I do it? When should I do it? We quote from the sermon book 755, the whole paragraph. "Indecision is one of the greatest foes to character building. While the liberty or privilege of choosing, exercising our wills, is one of the grandest blessings accorded to humanity, and it is an important element of man's likeness to his Creator. True, we see will, decision of purpose, manifested on every plane of life, even by the crawling worm or snail. But the human will, more richly endowed by the Creator, has a higher range, which includes especially decision in respect to the higher moralities, taking hold of questions of justice and love which affect and influence all life's affairs. Look where we will. We find that people who are successful in any department of life are those who have purpose and will and determination, whether it be good, bad, or indifferent. We see also that those who have no fixity of purpose, will, intention, are unsuccessful. As the scriptures declare, a double-minded man is unstable in all his ways. And if we look into the teachings of history, we find the same lesson taught by all the past. It may therefore be well settled in our minds that one of the chief difficulties of the majority of the race is lack of decision, indecision of purpose. James 1:8. Who are we? What are we? You and I, dear brethren, are the sum total of our decisions, good and bad. That's what we are. Choose ye this day, not tomorrow or the next day or some time maybe. Choose ye this day, now, right now. How good we feel and at peace. And we'll hear more about peace in the next session from our dear brother who will follow. How good we feel and at peace when finally we settle matters, put them to rest, and move on to further projects in progress. Pastor Russell suggests that even a bad decision can be better than no decision at all. Exercising our wills and making decisions is like the captain of a ship moving its rudder to and fro to avoid obstacles, to change course prudently, and constantly focused upon reaching port safely. Lack of willpower, indecision, aimlessly drifting through life is like a ship without a rudder, broken, unable to steer a straight safe course or make critical corrections swiftly as required to avoid disaster. With time, a strong will guided by God-given principles, making correct decisions produces a character pleasing to God and successful in the narrow way which leads to glory, honor, and immortality. Pastor Russell suggests that this development will even change our countenance. We paraphrase from the sermon book 756, paragraph 3, that a well-balanced mind with noble, honorable, exalted purpose, generous and benevolent towards others, is reflected in one's face. The ideal face reflects that the higher elements of the mind are in control, that the animal instincts for food and raiment have not run away with the manly qualities created originally in the image and likeness of God. It has well been said that we're not responsible for the face we were born with, but we are responsible for the face we die with. Think about that. Three important early decisions determine the future course of one's life. They should be carefully considered in connection with our goals, but too often little thought is given to them. Number one, consecration. Number two, marriage. And number three, occupation. In a nutshell, our life will be according to these three decisions. Considering consecration. The world is full of voices calling, "Follow me." Amongst them is the voice of the Lord calling to follow him. What a privilege to have heard this voice, and what an honor. Proverbs 23:26, my son, give me thine heart, and let thine eyes observe my ways. This is the most important decision anyone can ever make. I made this decision to consecrate my life to do the Lord's will, no matter what that might entail, as a young teenager. I didn't even know what was in this contract. I did not read the fine print, but I knew I wanted to do the Lord's will. And I have never regretted it, and it has been the most influential shaper of my life's experiences. It made me rich in the things that count in life. While willing to suffer loss of all things, even life itself, it brought me riches and pleasures that only the sincerely consecrated can understand. We can only imagine the chagrin of some in the kingdom who reflect back upon their decision to ignore the Lord's call in favor of worldly pursuits and fleeting pleasures. However, there is no penalty for counting the cost and concluding that the narrow way is more than one is willing to enter and able to walk successfully. I'll depart for a second, hopefully not completely run out of time here. There was a brother from the Seattle area going to the University of Washington. He was taking dentistry. He came into contact with the truth. He also was engaged to a very beautiful young woman, and he was in the School of Dentistry, which would prove to for him a lucrative and very interesting, profitable life. Well, he chose the young woman and dentistry. Later on, when I was young in the truth, he came to a testimony, a testimony meeting. He broke down and wept. He made a bad decision. He chose the lesser of two values. And in his older age, it came back upon him what a bad decision he had made. He was wealthy. He was way up in the dental world. He still had his beautiful wife. He had sons. But he realized he had botched it. Well, that's a sad thing. I felt sorry for him, but it was too late for him to do much about it. Luke 14:26-30. Whoever comes to me cannot be my disciple unless he loves me more than he loves his father, his mother, his wife, his children, his brothers, his sisters, and himself as well. Whoever does not carry his own cross and come after me cannot be my disciple. If any one of you is planning to build a tower, he sits down and first figures out what it will cost to see if he has enough money to finish the job. And if he doesn't, he'll not be able to finish the tower after laying the foundation. And all who see what happened will make fun of him. This man began to build but can't finish the job. That's from the TEV translation right now, today's English version, I think it is. But having counted the cost and decided to consecrate, to be successful, we must give it our all. Wholehearted devotion to serving the Lord, the truth, and the brethren. Now, consecration takes courage. The courage to swim against the flow, the courage to be different, the courage to be strange, the courage to be unusual. To study, to understand, to believe, and represent the Lord and His truth in word, in thought, in action, when others do not accept it, oppose it, or ridicule it. We do not consecrate to become popular in the world or amongst the brethren whom at times we must stand up to. The Bible provides an abundance of comforting and encouraging words which remind us that we are not alone. And we're not going to go too far into this because our brother Stuart has reminded of this us of this. Very, very well done. So we will pass along. Now, after consecration comes profession. We quote from the sermon book 7641. As choice, decision was necessary in the accepting of Christ at all, even by faith in our hearts, so another step in decision, determination, is reached and tested by our willingness or unwillingness to confess the Lord and His word before others. But the first decision in the heart is the most important step of all. After we have fully and irrevocably given our all to the Lord, it is a comparatively easy matter if our hearts remain faithful to confess Him and His word of grace. If it be asked, how shall we confess the Lord? We reply that the scriptural program for these is baptism in water, which symbolizes our full consecration even to death, and by which we are symbolically raised to walk in newness of life in our Redeemer's footsteps. This was not to be done for us by our parents when we were infants, nor by our godfathers or godmothers standing sponsors for us, but was to be our own individual act after making our consecration and coming to an understanding of the Lord's arrangements. Now we pass to the second most important decision, marriage. After consecration comes marriage in determining the first future course of our lives. How excellent is a well-matched, compatible mate. Together, those blessed with a sound marriage can face and surmount the storms of life that often swamp the lives of those less blessed. Ecclesiastes 4, 9, and 10. Two can accomplish more than twice as much as one, for the results can be much better. If one falls, the other pulls him up. And if a man falls when he is alone, he is in trouble. TLB, the Living Bible, excuse me. Sometimes I forget these abbreviations. Now the wise man declares, whoso findeth a wife, findeth a good thing, and obtaineth favor of the Lord. Proverbs 18:22. Conversely, how much sorrow and contention come from ill-advised unions. The consecrated must heed Paul's advice to marry only in the Lord to avoid future difficulties. But this is not enough. There must be compatibility, love, and respect. In 1 Corinthians 7, 32-40, the Apostle Paul presents careful advice to the consecrated single or widowed brother or sister. It is best to remain unencumbered by mate and family responsibilities, but if one marries, then only in the Lord. He also accepts that not all are able to live the single life. When two consecrated individuals walk together in the Lord, they can strengthen one another so that the result is greater than if separated. Now, the decision to marry is a critical decision and a solemn obligation. To death shall us part. Don't hear much of that anymore, do we? It seems like today many consider marriage as to be an experiment. Doesn't work out, we'll try another experiment. That doesn't work out, we'll try another. Marriage should never be considered a frivolous or temporary matter, as we see so often in the world. For vow making before the Lord is serious business. Numbers 30, verse 2. Now the third great decision we make, occupation. For the consecrated, one's occupation must be honorable in the sense of being upright and decent. Gives us a great deal of latitude. It would be best if it should benefit our fellow man and allow the practice of the golden rule, honesty and truthfulness. In our present evil world, this is not always so easy. Some bend the rules with little concern for their conscience or its effect upon others. Romans 12, 17. Repay no one evil for evil, but take thought for what is honest and proper and noble, aiming to be above reproach in the sight of everyone. That's Proverbs 20:22 from the Amplified. I recall a young brother from Los Angeles whose conscience was bothered by the practice of his retail employer, who raised the price of sale items before discounting them when having a sale, giving the illusion of a discount, but no discount at all. He quit, even though an elder in the truth told him that this is just the way business is done. Do we hear the voice of the tempter, the enticer? This brother is still in the truth, a solid elder. While the elder who gave him the bad advice fell into bad habits regarding the truth. Now, 1 Thessalonians 4:11-12. Make it your aim to live a quiet life, to mind your own business, and to earn your own living, just as we told you before. In this way, you will win the respect of those who are not believers, and you will not have to depend on anyone for what you need. Today's English version. When choosing an occupation, consideration should be given to attending meetings, the needs of our mate or children, time constraints, constructiveness, our own abilities and disposition, and above all, it should be decent and honest in the sight of God and all men. God does not care whether we dig ditches or pilot airliners, but he does care about our work attitude and ethics. Ecclesiastes 9:10. Whatever thy hand findeth to do, do it with thy might, for there is no work, nor device, nor knowledge, nor wisdom in the grave whither thou goest. Many have contented themselves with humble circumstances, like Joseph of old, only later to be called up higher and rewarded for their diligence and integrity. Imagine a slave in prison being called up to be the number two man in Egypt. Number two. And with his wisdom, he made Pharaoh wealthy. For 7 years, 7 good years, he gathered up all the harvests of the grain. He put them in great containers of some kind and protected it. And when the lean years came, Pharaoh sold the grain, but had to be paid for. He ended up with the land of all the wealthy nobles of Egypt. No wonder Pharaoh loved Joseph. Many have contented themselves with humble circumstances like Joseph, only to be called up higher and rewarded for their diligence and integrity later on. In Seattle, there was a bellhop. His name was Eddie Carlson. He worked for a hotel. Now the chain is called Westin Hotels. He rose to be president of that chain. And then, I don't remember who bought who, but it was then United Airlines and Westin Hotels. And he rose to be president of both. Bellhop, president. I've seen it before. Dishwasher, president. So don't ever worry about starting down below. One never knows what might happen. So, dear brethren, these three decisions will influence one's whole life, and they should be made carefully and prayerfully. Now, the next thought we are going to address about decisions is that prudent men seek advice from other knowledgeable men when making important decisions. That is, they learn from others. They're smart enough to know that they can avoid repeating mistakes others have already made and learned by. I've always been impressed with successful people who had this trait. Now, Christians find counsel in the Heavenly Father's Word and from those living closely to the Word. Paul advised Timothy in 2 Timothy 2:15, "Study to show thyself approved unto God, a workman that needeth not to be ashamed rightly dividing the word of truth." Time so spent places God's firmly in the memory where the Holy Spirit can bring it to mind, can bring God's will to mind when we reach the forks in the road. I was just discussing some of the situations amongst the Lord's people and those who've departed from the truth and other organizations. And Brother Jim happened to mention that he had thoroughly read through the Bible on three occasions and the New Testament even more. So that when he was exposed to the truth, first through the Jehovah's Witnesses and later to the truth that we know, he had something to quickly in his mind relate to. He didn't have to go back and become familiar with those scriptures. And so his previous work held him in good stead. Now Isaiah 30:21 says, "Thine ears shall hear a word behind thee, saying, This is the way, walk ye in it, when ye turn to the right hand and when ye turn to the left." I got those right, I believe. So advice and direction from experienced, mature minds is invaluable, particularly from the Word of God. But it is our responsibility to weigh matters and make the right decisions. Now we turn from these mighty, weighty matters to some day-to-day decisions that life thrusts upon us. How do we handle them? We must not think that because a matter is small, it is therefore unimportant or inconsequential. Carelessness in small things can develop into larger matters. Carelessness in small things leads to carelessness in larger matters. We read in the Songs of Solomon 2:15, and it's been quoted, "Take us the foxes." The old adage is, "Watch your pennies, and the dollars will take care of themselves." My grandmother taught me when I was a little fellow, 10%. You earn a dollar, you take a dime, and you put it in your piggy bank. Always save 10% of what you earn. Always. I tried to follow that much of my life, and it always worked well. Because then when the emergencies arose, you had a little nest egg to take care of them. But today, we have a credit economy. It's very hard to do the same things as you did in past times. Now, a small decision carelessly made can bring one into a situation that is very hard to back out of. It's almost like, you know, you take a turn, sometimes it looks like it's a good place, an alleyway maybe, you go into the alley, all of a sudden you're halfway down and it's dead end. And then you have to back up. Some of us aren't such good backers. It's hard sometimes to get out of a situation that you entered into very quickly and easily without thought, but had much greater consequences than you would have imagined. And so, brethren, let us weigh the consequences of one action ahead of time and spare ourselves ill-considered and unpleasant results. Now, another thing that helps us when making decisions is to visualize what Jesus would do. And you can read this in any Christian literature from any denomination almost. But it's not bad advice. It's good advice. What would Jesus do? If in any way we think Jesus would not approve, then we should not do it. If he's sitting right here, would we do it? If he's sitting on our shoulder, would we do it? That's something to think about, isn't it? Now, the apostle gives a list of good things to think about, to meditate upon, and to measure our actions against. It's one we all know almost by heart, Philippians 4, 8 through 9. Finally, brethren, think upon these things. True, honest, just, pure, lovely, good report, virtue, praise. Those things which ye have learned and received and heard and seen in me, do. So this is what we were talking about the other day, the mind and the will. And then what we're going to hear in the next hour. And the God of peace shall be with you. When I hear criticism of the life of Pastor Russell, I get angry. I also get worried. About an individual that could read the life of Pastor Russell and not be overwhelmed at the example. All Brother Russell said was, those things which ye have both learned and received and heard and seen in me, do. Same thing Apostle Paul said. And he wrote it down and made it easy to understand. So what we think about, brethren, leads to what we do. Actions are first approved in the mind. Now we'll go on to the rule of first things first. I just made this rule up myself, but I think it's not a bad one. I've made it up for myself. This consists of a list of priorities we considered when making decisions. And it can help us choose between conflicting interests, responsibilities, mortgages on our time and energy. And we all have these things. We don't walk, in a little vacuum here. We're surrounded by people we owe things to and so forth, commitments we've made. So first of all, on this rule of first things first, when trying to make decisions, remember, God and consecration comes first. 1 Corinthians 6:19-20. What, know ye not that your body is the temple of the Holy Spirit which is in you, which ye have of God, and ye are not your own? For ye are bought with a price, that is, you're a slave. Therefore glorify God in your body and in your spirit, which are God's. He's bought you, he possesses you, you're his servant, as well as a son. So this is our first consideration when making decisions. Next, if married, our spouse comes next. Marriage brings with it a mortgage on time and energy, but it must not come before our higher mortgage for God, while it is considered and must be carefully considered. If there be children, then follows their interest. Next, our brethren come, but not at the expense of those above. Our employer claims the right of an honest day's work, and this claim must be honored faithfully. If, in conflict with above, we can change our work situation for one more compatible. But we do owe our employer always an honest day's work if we want an honest day's pay. Neighbors, family, and friends. By the way, I read recently, nobody who's hired for an 8-hour day puts any more than six in. The average employee wastes 2 hours of time every day. Coffee machine, phone calls, going to the bathroom when they don't need to go to the bathroom, whatever. 2 hours out of there. Well, that's not right, is it? Now, next in the list comes neighbors, family, and friends, and community. And we do. We own a house in the neighborhood, responsible to keep it up, keep it nice looking. We may have responsibilities within that neighborhood for certain functions, especially if you have a condominium. You might have to sit on the condominium committee. Not much fun, but it's there. And last, and we might say least, come personal interests we might deem selfish, unimportant, or unnecessary in our consecrated life. Next, we give some thought on honoring prior commitments. A part of this rule is honoring prior commitments first. For instance, if we owe a bill to someone, we cannot give a gift to charity or to another party until this bill is satisfied. Otherwise, we're not giving money, we're giving somebody else's money. Likewise, we should not run up more bills before paying the bills we already owe. Nor should we gratify our personal wants in life if previous excesses have yet to be paid for. This responsibility in such matters builds character, and we all get a chance to do that in this modern world. I think the fact that we have credit so easy today is a terrible enticement to use it wrongly. It's so easy to get. You don't even have to ask for it. Every day in the mail, you get a new card. Tomorrow, get another new card. The day after, you get another. You just move your balance over here and look what you get. Boy, can you get in trouble. Now, we'll speak briefly about decisions. Oh, no, first of all, bodily needs are important also. It is obvious that while being spent in service to others, the basic needs of our fallen flesh must be met or ill health follows. We all need adequate balanced food, exercise, and sleep to have sufficient energy to carry out our responsibilities. We are reminded of Paul's advice to Timothy, 1 Timothy 5:23. Drink no longer water, but use a little wine for thy stomach stake and thy own infirmities. But if not careful, the flesh will demand more and lead to self-gratification, which can severely hinder our spiritual development and health. So we need to take care. For sleep, we have to have sustenance. We should get proper exercise, but not let it overwhelm us and become a habit, or a bad habit maybe even. Decisions made for us. There are certain experiences of life in which outward circumstances control us. We just don't have any part in the decision making. Now, these decisions made for us can in retrospect be the best of all decisions if accepted as from or permitted by the Lord. Have you ever had one of those things? You thought, man, I'm losing my job. What am I going to do? I've been in that pickle, and then you wait, you're patient. Maybe the store goes down and you're seeing the bottom of the bowl and something comes up better than ever before. I can remember many times young people coming to me and worried about this thing or that thing. One young brother was having trouble in his employment. And is his superior, and he didn't know what to do. And my advice to him was simply, well, quit that job. They don't like your work. Why work there with people who don't like you and don't appreciate your work? Go get another job. Probably in the next place you will be appreciated. I don't know why the thought didn't come in his mind, but he did so. And but go in and part nicely. Tell them the problem. Tell them why you're leaving. Well, he did that. Got himself another job within a few days. And then his superior, well, you can't go now. We got to get this job finished, and there's nobody to do it. So sometimes you just have to make a decision. You're being badly treated. You don't have to be badly treated in the workplace. You have a right to be reasonably treated in the workplace. If it's too bad, you try to explain it, but if you can't, move on. So accepting overruling providences in our life brings peace of mind and contentment. Lord, I would have chosen differently, but thy will be done. Recognizing God's wisdom and bending our wills to it will keep us from a complaining and unthankful spirit, devastating to Christian character. I have a friend here. He likes me. Some of the most important and beneficial changes in my life were made for me by others or by circumstances, while some of my personal decisions were, to say the least, disasters, though they contained valuable lessons. T-square method. If you have trouble making a decision, make a T-square, line down the middle of the paper, one across the top, good, you know, plus here, minus over there. Put down the good points of making that decision, put down the bad points, and pretty soon you look at this thing and one side's going to get heavy and the other side's going to get light. And sometimes that's helpful in making a decision, particularly if you're given to indecision. Now, living with bad decisions, and we all make these, living with bad decisions is called integrity. It would not be hard to make a list of bad decisions in our lives. Psalm 15, 1-4. Lord, who shall abide in thy tabernacle? Who shall dwell in thy holy hill? He that walketh uprightly and worketh righteousness, and speaketh the truth in his heart. Recently I've been trying to work on a discourse in the kingdom. And I've been having trouble putting it together because there's certain details that are just left open that we're not told about it. But this one verse, I believe, aptly describes the Lord's social order in contradistinction to the present social order. Mankind will be required to walk uprightly, to work righteousness, and speak the truth, not just with his mouth, but in his heart. In other words, when Jesus was asked, what's the greatest commandment? Thou shalt love the Lord thy God with all thy heart and soul and mind, and the second is like unto it, thou shalt love thy neighbor and thyself. This is the whole law and the commandments. So if we love righteousness, if we love the Lord, if we love our fellow man, we will walk uprightly, we will work righteously in all our doings, and we'll always speak the truth and be honest. And really, I think that describes the kingdom better than all the things I was trying to put together. But now the end of this is describing those whom the Lord loveth. He that sweareth to his own hurt and changeth not. If you enter into a bad business deal and you sign your name on the contract, keep it, no matter how much it hurts. Vow making. We have bankruptcy now laws and walk away from it pretty easy. Okay, time's up. I'm going to skip over vow making. We discussed that in the panel. And we'll bring you to the thoughts that the Lord's people are being trained to be judges. Now he who would lead must first learn to follow. And if we're going to be judges on the other side of the veil, we must learn to be good judges on this side of the veil. 1 Corinthians 6, 2-3. Do ye not know that the saints shall judge the world? And if the world shall be judged by you, are ye unworthy to judge the smallest matters? Know ye not that we shall judge angels? How much more the things that pertain to this life? Hebrews 7:21. Those priests were made without an oath, but this with an oath by him that said unto him, The Lord swear and will not repent. Thou art a priest forever after the order of Melchizedek. Matthew 19:28-29. Ye which follow me in the regeneration, you'll sit on 12 thrones, judging the 12 tribes of Israel. Symbolic. And everyone hath forsaken house, brethren, sisters, fathers, mother, wife, children, lands, for my name's sake, shall receive 100-fold and inherit everlasting life. Behold, I stand at the door, Revelation 3:20-21. This is the era we live in. Behold, I stand at the door and knock. If any man hear my voice and open the door, I come in to him. Will sup with him, and he with me. To him that overcometh will I grant to sit down with me in my throne, even as I also overcame and am set down with my Father in his throne. Why do you sit on a throne? You sit in judgment. That was what the king did. 1 Corinthians 15:51-52. I show you a mystery. We shall not all sleep. We shall be changed, raised incorruptible. What a thought. 1 Corinthians 15:58. Therefore, my beloved brethren, be ye steadfast, unmovable. We were just in Hawaii, and those great waves were coming in. And when it came in on the sand, and I was walking along, that sand just moved around. I could hardly keep my balance. One little boy was standing there and waiting to see how far his feet would sink down into the sand as these waves kept coming in and liquefying the sand. But on each side of that beautiful beach, there were these huge rocks. And those waves would come in and they'd bang on those rocks. They were there when I came. They were there when I left. They were probably there 300, 400, 500 years ago. They'll probably be there another 1,000 years. Steadfast, unmovable. Rock-like. Living stones. Shaped here, inserted into the temple without the sound of a hammer. Abounding in the work of the Lord, for as much as ye know that your labor is not in vain in the Lord. What a prospect. Lord bless you all.
A Thank you very much, Brother Lawrence. If we follow those principles and rules, we will surely make better decisions, great and small. So thank you very much. We will close the discourse with hymn number 4, the last two verses.